I'm told the number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love. Loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us and make us better humans. So join me and my Love Speaks friends for some stories, some laughs, some inspiration, some speaker tips, and some unexpected truth. It's the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Welcome to the Love Speaks series. Here's your host, Sally Lou Loveman.
Okay, so I am very excited today with my guest in the studio. We are speaking leadership today with Lifeway Foods CEO Julie Smolansky, who at age 27 became the youngest female CEO of a publicly held company, named to Forbes Business 40 Under 40 and Fortune's 55 Most Influential Women on Twitter. Julie is a natural-born leader, a survivor, a humanitarian, and a warrior. She is also my friend. Please welcome to the podcast my friend Julie Smolansky. I'm so excited that you're here today.
Thank you. It's so fun to be with you, Sally Lou.
I love, love, love. My first question, and then we're going to talk about how we met, is how is love speaking to you today? And what I mean by that is, how is your heart full? How are you feeling just today in this moment of what you've experienced already in your morning?
Yeah. I feel, my heart feels so full. Like, I am just watching, you know, how much has changed in the last few years for us. And I reflect on that all the time, but especially.
Does us mean women?
Women. Okay. Yes, definitely women. But men too, actually, okay. For both. Because like we just have evolved a lot as a society very quickly in just the last few years. And it feels like some conversations that we were not having are finally being had. And even though we're like in the middle of a cultural movement and revolution, and these conversations are complex and tricky and sticky and gritty, but they're the right conversations that we are really long overdue in having.
And you know what? That is so cool, because here we were talking before the podcast started. I know your story. I've done my research, and every word you just used is a description of how you are as a leader. And today we're talking about leadership. And you really do have to be a leader to have these conversations. You don't have to be a CEO, but you have to be a leader in your life to be able to stand up and have these very difficult conversations where the text is changing all the time. The circumstances are changing. You have to be gritty. You have to be brave. And you really, truly, you are a survivor. You are a humanitarian. So you are always there to help your fellow man, woman, or child.
Thank you.
And you are a warrior because you don't back down. If someone tells you you can't do something, you're basically like, watch me. And and we're going to talk about a lot of the things that you've done. And let's just start with the fact that when you're not, you know, being a CEO of this huge company where she brought me all kinds of kefir. I always say kefir. Is it kefir or kefir?
There's a couple ways. Some people say kefir or kefir.
Oh, kefir.
Yeah,
I'm drinking it right
kefir.
Now. I'm drinking the raspberry. Very
so
excited.
Good, so delicious. Okay. I love it. Mm. So some people say kefir or kefir. In Russian, we say kefir.
Kefir.
Right? So you can roll the R.
I'm going to say that next time I'm in the market.
Kefir.
What aisle is your kefir in?
It's
delicious.
Thank you.
And I sidetracked to that, but we're going to talk about kefir because that is what Julie does in her day job, and I'm sure her night job and her weekend job at Lifeway Foods.
24/7.
But she's also an author of the Kefir Cookbook, which is magnificent, sitting in front of me. And she's also an executive producer on films like The Hunting Ground.
Right.
And you just were at Sundance with On the Record.
Yes.
And so that was a brave, bold move to be an executive producer on such a film.
Yeah.
And how did that feel also with the times that we're in right now, the revolution that we're in right now of changing the way men and women speak.
Yeah, it was so powerful. I mean, the second I got to Sundance, I started to cry. I was so overwhelmed with emotion, and I don't cry usually. And I was so moved by all of the emotion and what I knew we were going to be doing. And I mean, we blew the roof off Sundance.
You did.
We did. And it was, you know, it was the film that came in with the most chaos around it.
Right.
And it's unfortunate, but I think at the end of the day, you know, publicity, you know, there's no bad PR, as they
say. Exactly.
Well, I don't know. Today, maybe, but, you know, but it just never goes
away. But when
away.
You're talking about something, then it's top of mind.
Yeah. And it created more visibility for the issue and the film. And
so tell the listeners, if they aren't aware of it and haven't read the reviews, what your film is about.
Sure. On the Record shines a light on the Me Too movement for women of color, and specifically gives voice to women who are who felt that they have been left out of the Me Too conversation.
Right.
And it tackles, you know, race, and it tackles sexual assault and workplace harassment and mental health issues and bravery and courage and all of those things. Power, who's got it, who gets to tell a story, who's got the privilege to share, you know, all of these things it covers. But for me, you know, I've been an activist in the space for 30 years, and I've often felt that I was alone in the fight, that that it was nobody cared about it, that it was so highly stigmatized and taboo to talk about or to use the words. I mean, I still even have an issue with Me Too as a term that
What's
we're
using.
What's your issue? Why aren't we using the word sexual assault and rape? Like
the
words are still, we move around the words. We don't want to use the words. And the movie points that out. Actually, Drew Dixon highlights that so beautifully in the way she articulates what it is like to be a survivor.
Yes.
And she shares that experience. And I think that's what the film does so well, so beautifully, is to really show that experience of what it is to live with a trauma like that over the long term. These, you know, the survivors in the film that we feature have had a long time to process and to analyze and to sit with this. Whereas in The Hunting Ground, the film I did prior, which highlighted sexual assault on college campus, the students were so early in their journey.
Right.
And we as a society didn't have the vocabulary to even tackle this topic. And that film really laid the domino effects for the Me Too movement to then happen.
Right.
So, you know, for me to now be in and I came in through film, through activism, so not being a filmmaker.
Exactly.
I didn't go to like film school.
I came
in through the activist side. And so, you know, I started to see that film could be such a big, powerful tool to create empathy and compassion and to tell stories at scale, and that it's, you know, lives on. And, you know, I can go around to panels and speaking engagements all day long, but, you know, there's only one of me, and this film, the films can just do so much.
Exactly.
So, you know, to see a film change the world, and we say it so, you know, so cliche, films can change the world, but I really felt that our film changed the world. And this, you know, On the Record will do that too. It specifically highlights the Russell Simmons survivors and their stories. And that's very, you know, that's a very hard conversation to
have. Very hard conversation. And as a white female, you are on the team of other white producers,
filmmakers.
And you're telling the story, you know, of women of color. How did that play into it? Or how did that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky.
You?
No, I don't
help you.
I believe my feminism is intersectional, and that's my vision and goal to have that. And I think, you know, that we always talk about having allies in this movement, and that I believe we should be linked arm in arm.
Right.
And that, you know, when we can join together, we could actually stop the abuse that we're suffering, that's generational, that is an epidemic, that is global, that is the silent dirty secret in the world. Yes. And it's no longer yes. that way.
Yes.
So to be a part of that movement, it's just so gratifying. And I really feel like I've realized my dreams, which was to end violence against women, but to push this conversation. And I have realized that dream.
You, Julie, you are literally, like when I talk about being in your purpose, mm-hmm. I talk a lot about that on my own platform for Love Speaks, and I talk a lot about it on this podcast and in my book. So I am all about purpose. It makes me almost want to weep when I think about your story, because your purpose is you just landed this CEO job when your dad, I mean, it just, you were 27, right?
Right, yeah.
It was your family company.
Yeah, my parents right. started the business.
Right. So you landed this job. And yeah, it was probably something you were very interested in. You're very good at it. You are a natural born leader. I'm going to ask you, where does that leadership come from? No doubt it has something with your lineage. Mm-hmm. But from this work that you've done, and you grew your father's business, like I have the numbers here. Like you went from 12 million in sales to 120 million yeah. in sales in 5 years, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was in like it was a journey.
And then you expanded distribution throughout the U.S. of kefir.
Yes, that's right,
kefir. And that all happened, but at the time, you probably had no idea that this success you were building for people to, you know, have this healthy yeah. system in their body, right. which is a product that helps our gut
yeah.
which your gut is good. Like literally, I mean, talk about
drink a
healthy gut. A lot of kefir. All the while, an executive producer can be an activist all they want, but an executive producer cannot be an executive producer without bringing in some money.
Yes.
And so you were blessed with the fact that you had been successful in this
right.
business.
Right.
And you are trusting your gut to say, I'm using my personal story. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I am a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
You are a survivor of abuse.
Yes.
Of sexual abuse, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And I'm going to be able to amplify that mm-hmm. voice
yeah.
for millions.
Yes,
that
exactly.
is Love Speaks. That is beautiful. Well,
thank far, you.
It's way more than Love Speaks. I don't mean it like that. That's
yeah.
like roll your eyes like I'm like,
no.
oh, yeah. Like it's, no, it is love speaking to the world through you,
yeah,
through
thank
your
you.
Through your vessel, through aww. Your body, because
I'm
you,
gonna cry.
Yeah, like it really is beautiful to me
thank
because you.
You
are doing what you love
yeah.
and you are serving others and
thank
you are speaking
you.
Your story so that others can heal. I mean, it's beautiful. And you've been very active in the rape kits that have not mm-hmm. been tested.
Yep.
Can you tell us about that and how many years you've been involved in that?
Yeah. Yeah. I started a campaign, Test 400K, to help test the backlog of untested rape kits, because there's 400,000 in
400,000.
Yeah. That,
in the country.
Yeah. That go back to 1978. that have never been tested, and less than 20% of evidence in the last 30 years has ever been analyzed. And, you know, sexual assault is the most underreported crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, less than 15%, 20 to 15% are reported. So, you know, like 80% of sexual assault
right.
is not reported.
Right.
On top of that, for false accusations, because people always say, oh, what about the false, you know, the FBI studied and said that only 2 to 5% of reports are false. Okay, so very low number on the most underreported crime in
right.
in the world.
Right.
So this to me was one of the Human Rights Watch calls it the biggest human rights violation that women in the United States face. And the way that like I came to it, well, I was a rape crisis counselor in college,
mm-hmm.
and I had been in about 100 hospital rooms across
had
the city of Chicago.
Had you already been a survivor?
Yes.
And victim? Okay.
Yes. And that's what led me to the work.
Right.
And I believe I wanted to see myself in the survivors, but also, you know, I had experienced it, so I had wanted to be of service
right.
to somebody else.
Right.
So
using your story.
Yeah. And that became a big, the big mission for me is that after this happened, I decided that I wanted to make my experience meaningful,
mm-hmm.
that it wasn't just, that it didn't just happen in vain, but that
right.
there was some bigger reason for it. And not to say that this horrible thing happened, because, you know, this, I don't think that the divine
right.
wants, you know, people no. to be hurt
no.
for a lesson. But I do believe that, you know, it happened, and then I wanted to make sense of it. And for me to make sense of it, and for many victims, part of the process to get to survivor is through advocacy and activism.
Right.
And then you know, I feel like I took back all of my power.
Think of all. Yeah, you got your cape. Yeah, that is for sure.
Thanks.
Think of all the people listening. If you are listening right now and you are a victim, you have yeah. been a victim and you haven't spoken
right.
that story.
Yeah.
The weight of that you yeah. carry.
Yeah. Well, and it was so hard.
Enormous.
Because, yeah. And to me, it was just so hard to live with it as a secret.
Yeah.
Because even though I had almost immediately started activism, that was part of my fight. Even though I did that, I think I tried to make it seem like it was for my school or for,
right.
you know,
right.
to do
right.
the right thing.
Right.
Like, I didn't want to say that it was me.
It was you. Right.
And that is hard, because then you're living in a cage, and everyone, you don't get to fully have real relationships and experiences, and you're kind of separate from everyone else because you're always walking around editing yourself,
yes.
you know, acting a particular way that nobody would know.
Yes.
You know, I even remember when Facebook first launched and I, you know, joined Facebook, I didn't even want to share an article about sexual assault because I didn't want anyone to think it was me. So, I mean, the amount
so
of
much
courage
shame that yeah. you're carrying around, and that is all it is courage. And then
yeah.
for one person to speak their story, how, you
the
probably can't
effect.
Even count the amount
no.
of people that have been able to come
Ugh.
And speak their story because of hearing yours. Because
yeah.
I know you do a lot of speaking.
Yes.
And you engage your audience beautifully.
Yes,
I've seen
you
speak.
Thank
and
you.
I believe, and I know someone very close to me who I just found this out about, who just from someone else's story spoke one piece, and mm-hmm. that was all that person needed to know, that is what has been tripping that person up for the last
yes.
umpteen years.
Yes.
And think about that as a gift to give yourself, to
Thank
speak
you.
Your story so that you can give others peace.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it is. Just
and,
to be able for others to just say it and speak it so that they can move on and not feel the shame.
Right. And
that's
it is
a true leader.
So liberating for
yeah.
me. It has been liberating. I didn't know what was going to be on the other side of it. So
yeah.
after The Hunting Ground came out, that film, 5 days before the Oscars, so it was nominated for an Oscar, and the song Till It Happens to You that Lady Gaga and
yeah.
Diane Warren wrote for the film was also nominated.
Love
and,
them both.
Thank you. Yeah, they're both amazing.
Gosh.
And so 5 days before the film, Amy Zering, the producer, said, hey, you're a survivor, because I had told her my story.
You stood on that stage, right?
Yeah, and
yeah.
she invited me to share the stage. And that was when with the 50 survivors.
Right.
And that was when I came out publicly. And even...
So that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, that was only in February of 2016. So
wow.
I am learning a new vocabulary for myself, too, and
yeah.
Embodying that publicly now.
What
and
are
like,
some of the words that you're using that are different?
Well, I'm saying that I'm a survivor,
yes.
and I'm, you know, admitting to
yes.
the fact that, you know, I, too, was
right.
abused.
Right.
And I'd never done that. And even
right.
after I was still, even after the Oscars, I was still making sure and negotiating with press and media what words they would use. So I would not let them say rape. I would not let them say victim. And all different things that I try to, you know, control around the vocabulary.
Did
around
you have
my
to
story.
Talk to A, your, I have three questions. Did you have to talk to your family about it? Did you have to talk to your employees about it? And do you allow the press to say those words now? Sorry, that's a lot.
Yes, I did. My significant other did mm-hmm. know, the father of my children.
Right.
He was aware and, you know, was kind of helping me get there.
Yeah.
And then, but not, and no one else in my family. And then, and not on my team either. So no one was aware
wow.
that this was going to happen. So
right.
my team sort of was a little thrown off. But
right.
I will say that everyone responded really, really well. And, you know, I was really, the world rose up to meet me and the universe kind of came to me and was so supportive. And it was, I'm so grateful for all of the people who, you know, encouraged me and gently nudged me forward and who, you know, responded and gave validated my experience.
And as the mother of two girls.
Yeah. And that is, that was number one.
Right.
And I still haven't really, you know, talked to them deeply about it, but we talk about boundaries all the time.
Right.
We talk about consent even at their age of 11 and 9 and like learning about
that's not
their
too young
voice.
Actually
I mean boundaries
consent is not too young and boundaries
I mean even like can I have a hug you know asking kids rather than forcing them to go hug the you know creepy uncle whatever it is so I've always used those kind of words to talk about boundaries with my children but I it's still like not easy, you know, to talk about. And I still don't want to own the words. I don't want them to come off my lips.
Right. Do you not want those words used in the press either?
No, I think I'm okay now. I mean, I don't like to use victim because, you know, I feel that I'm a thriver.
Exactly.
At this point. But I do believe it's important to use the words if the person chooses because it's also powerful to understand the victim experience.
Yes.
Because so easy we just want to jump ahead and not allow that that person the space to have sympathy and empathy for and compassion for that experience.
I know for years of knowing you now, I met you when I first started my business and our friend Peter Berkman, who is on the Young Presidents Organization with you. You guys are on the forum together, which to me is the most wonderful it's just the most wonderful, what's the word? Like just that it makes so much sense to have a forum of your life. Like even if you are not a young president or CEO, like get a forum of people that
advisors.
You really respect that can tell you things that can help you with your life, your business and people you can bounce ideas off of and who aren't always going to say, yeah, you're doing a great job.
Right.
Like who can really tell you, hey, maybe you could do this, that, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful support system.
Yeah.
And so this is, so I Peter asked me to come and I laugh when I think about it because we were sitting like in couches and I had like this PowerPoint and it was like five people and I'm like, whatever. And,
it was great.
And it just, it was me talking about the lessons I had learned from, in my opinion, besides you, the greatest CEO of life, which was my boss, Oprah Winfrey, and the leadership that she that she taught to me and everyone who worked for her. And I just remember really connecting with you.
Yeah,
and I was like, I really like you.
Likewise.
I really like you. And
then
we kept running into each other. And then we started following each other on social media. Instagram wasn't even that big then. And then we connected that way. And I just really dug you. You know, I was like, really brave. You're really brave. And all the while, I think we sat and had lunch one time at Soho House and you were like, I want to tell my story.
Yeah.
And I never felt so much passion from anyone that's ever wanted to say it. And you know me, like I've written, I love a story. Like that is what connects human to human.
Yeah.
And it allows us to heal. Like your story has healed so many people.
And I haven't even shared all of it.
You haven't shared it yet.
I haven't shared it
that
yet.
That is my point. So
what am I waiting for?
No, not what are you waiting for. What do you hope to do with your story? What do you see? How do you see your story becoming available to people? Like what is your what's your goal?
Yeah,
is it a film?
I'll just write
book?
The flap. I'll write the opening flap up to it.
It's a tweet.
I mean, first of all, I think I am still like processing my own story.
Right.
Because I haven't really wanted to admit my own story to myself.
Yes.
But I believe I am getting there and getting stronger, kind of even doing these kind of interviews and podcasts and talking about it. I get stronger every day. I hope that people walk away from it, whatever they learn of me, that they feel hopeful and inspired and passionate to take whatever movement that they're passionate about. And there's so many broken things in our world. And
so many.
Like, it's hard. It's like very hard to pick the thing. But
right.
you will follow your gut, which I have followed my gut.
So fitting. It's almost like the fact that you have this business that makes your gut better.
I know.
It's kind of like me being named Love. Like, it's kind of just like, is that divine? I think so.
I think so. It's divine. Definitely. Because following my gut has been the key to everything. I mean, I am only alive because I have followed my gut.
That needs to be your book title.
I know. Follow your gut. It's probably been done. But yeah, I mean, for me, being able to sort of, when I think back on the trajectory of my life and how I did continue to survive and exist, and it was always because I have had incredible people that showed up in my life at the darkest moments and have pulled me up and then infused me with enough love and saw me, and that gave me like the ability to go forward.
Right.
I think to be seen is really important. I mean, it's, you know, very cathartic to share your story. I don't quite know. I mean, and maybe I underestimate people in the world, but I mean, my story is really heavy. I mean, it is a very heavy, painful story. It comes with trigger warnings. I mean, that's a hard, so that, you know, I don't know if the world is quite ready for that, but I hope that also people know that they can get through really hard times and that they could come out of it, that, you know, even in darkness, that there's light and they could go into the abyss and come out.
And one thing I will say, like your story could be really, really, your story, anyone's story could be really, really almost too difficult to tell. And too difficult for people to hear.
Right.
And when that is the case, you don't have to tell the whole thing. Like for me, I didn't tell my whole story about my marriage because it wouldn't serve anyone. It would certainly wouldn't serve my children. Certainly wouldn't serve my husband. It certainly wouldn't serve me. So what's the point?
Right.
But I could tell you what a woman feels like when suddenly the rug gets pulled out from under you, and what I did to make that decision.
How to survive.
Was it survival of the marriage or not the marriage? And so those are the things that people can take away. Now, I believe that the more honest we are about our stories, the more we can help others. But you don't have to say everything.
Right.
And you can protect the stuff that you don't want told and tell it to the people that, you know, have earned the right to hear it.
Yes. I do believe, like, it, you know, I get a little bit worried about all the disclosures that happen on like social media because things are disclosed and then there's just like this void and there's not that, you know, the resources to help with the disclosures.
Right.
Because you do have to continue to process it. And it's really the like really difficult things that we're talking about now that's like so public. But I mean, I hope for me, it was so important to see role models that had experienced things that I experienced that continue to survive and thrive, like Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first survivor that I knew in a public life that had that story. And when I was a teen, she was the only one that I knew of. And I hung on to her for dear life. And I was like, well, she's doing really well. So yeah, it must not have, you know, it was, she, you know, there's hope for someone like me then, if that's the case.
Yeah.
And I think that there are so many young people who experience trauma who then suffer silently and don't have a role model to hang on to.
Yeah.
And so I would just like to say that if anyone has experienced trauma, like any kind of sexual abuse or physical abuse, that it is, you're not alone and that, you know, you can get through and that your story is valid and you deserve to share it if you choose to share it. And the shame is not on you. It is on the perpetrator.
Exactly. And I will say this, and then we're going to get to your leadership, because now we're talking about something that is so part of your story and so part of being a leader. But I do have more questions about leadership. I will say this, having worked at the Oprah Winfrey Show, having just been an empathetic person and person that I hear a lot of stories, I don't know what the numbers could be, but I know more people who have suffered from sexual abuse than I know who haven't.
Now, it's like one in three.
Okay, there you go. So in my family, we don't have that story to tell. And I'm grateful.
Maybe no.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. I don't have that story to tell. I don't know of any other stories. We're pretty open family, you know, sisters, nieces, all that, daughters. But I was just told recently of a family member. Had no idea.
Didn't know.
Didn't know.
We forget. This is what I'm saying. We forget how far we've come with the Me Too movement so quickly.
And the silence is deafening.
Yeah.
And anyone listening, because I've seen it and it affected my life. If you are the victim of sexual abuse, tell someone. Tell someone and let that lift your burden.
Yes. It changed my life. I mean, I'm alive because
you are.
I told somebody.
You are alive because of your story. You said it.
I shared enough to get the adults in the room to help me. And, you know, I thought I was maybe, you know, putting on a good show for everyone, but the adults in the room were visible. Like my teachers, my creative writing teacher saw it in my writing. And even though writing saved my life. So eventually I will come back to write my story.
Literally, writing is the key to healing.
Yeah, because even I couldn't say the things, but I could write it.
Right.
And so I started to write things, and my creative writing teacher in high school saw it, and she had referred me to the school counselor, who then referred me to more counseling. And so that saved my
teachers.
Life. I mean, it saved my life and continues to save my life, and I continue to learn about it. And we're learning so much more about, you know, trauma and the impact on the brain and on the body and how our response is. And I mean, just learning that all even today continues to help me in making food choices. You know, kefir, we're learning about gut health and how kefir can help reduce stress, depression, and anxiety. And I mean, it is, for me and for survivors, it is so important that all of these small things, we think it's nothing, but self-care and post, you know, and listen, everyone has challenges. Maybe you don't have this particular challenge, but you will have some sort of challenge. If you're alive, life beats you up. And if you're in it, you're really. Or it might be a family member. I mean, maybe you're so blessed that nothing happens and you're like just living.
Somebody's got something.
Something. And you have to be there for someone else and show up and do it, you know, for someone. So, you know, I hope that, you know, people see and when they feel that they are challenged or that they're in their darkest days, that they feel that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that the sun will rise again, and that, you know, that they can, out of their darkest pain, make something out of it. And they can, you know, use that to make art or write a book, whatever it is, whatever way that manifests for you. You know, to share that. And I mean,
it
our
is
stories.
Why, it is our birthright. It is why we are here. It is why we are humans and are allowed to be able to share the stuff that happens to us with others so that we can all just get a little bit happier day by day.
Yeah. I mean, I am so hopeful and optimistic for a better future. And when I had my daughters, that's what really made me sort of say, I have to do more on this issue, that just working on the issue is not enough, that I knew that I would have to say it was me. That would, you know, help me create those pathways to empathy from others. And
you're using your platform in a way that is so powerful because you have a voice, and not everybody does. Not everybody has the access you have. You have access because of your success as a CEO, as a female, as a woman. Not everybody has that. And I
recognize my privilege.
Exactly. And I will say thank you. Hats off to you, because there are so many people who don't have it. And thankfully, you have the heart to say, you know what? I can do something. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. And I knew that I'd be able to go through that fire, you know, once
Well,
the girls.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because where do you get your grit from? That's my question.
Yeah. Well, I think about my ancestors. Yeah. I feel my ancestors all around me. I feel like I'm standing on their shoulder.
I have the chills. I totally see them.
Yeah. I mean, I see them and I feel them too. You know, I'm a survivor of the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. Yeah. And my great-grandmother was a victim of the Holocaust. So she was murdered in Kiev when the Nazis stormed her town and her home. And she told my grandmother, who was a teenager at the time, to go run out into the forest and hide. And she did. So I have this like lineage of really strong survivor women. Oh, and on my other side, my maternal grandmother, who's not Jewish, was Orthodox Ukrainian. So she protected and took three Jewish kids into her home and took them as her own and saved these three kids. Right. So I have these two grandmothers who are survivors, protectors, you know, and these stories were passed down to me. And, you know, I think about Anne Frank and I think about, you know, just where my ancestors came from in their journey and story. And I think I'm alive today in 2020 and I've been educated and I have more privilege than 99% of the rest of the world.
Right.
And even though I'm a female in the United States and there's challenges that I face in the, you know, business community and this and that, and I have all mm-hmm. of the same things. But, you know, I went to Bangladesh with Every Mother Counts, Christy Turlington, who became mm-hmm. a friend of mine. Several, like, I don't know, over a decade ago. And I had just had my kids and Christy took me to Bangladesh and I started talking to the teenagers there. And like I was, this was a very distinct moment that was transformative for me, but I was in the slums and talking to a 14-year-old girl and I said, what's your biggest challenge? And she said, you know, I want to go to school, but I'm afraid that I'm going to get raped in on the, when I'm going.
On the way, right.
And I just thought, oh, my gosh, like I actually that resonates with me.
Yeah.
And even though I am a white privileged CEO from the United States and I'm talking to a 14-year-old girl in the slums of Bangladesh, I totally know what she's talking about.
Right.
It's the universal sisterhood.
Right.
That's what we all know as women, as little girls. We learn right away that it is a risk and dangerous to be a girl. And it hit me so hard.
Yeah.
And then the next day we went to the acid violence clinic where, so in these countries, acid is poured on women, thrown on women for like something like so stupid, like turning down a date,
right?
Something really crazy. These women are horrifically
disfigured.
It's just disfigured. It's just horrific. And but this one, and so a lot of girls don't go to school because of the reasons that I just mentioned, or for periods, you know, when they have their period, they're off out of school because they don't have the feminine hygiene products or stigma, whatever. So they're not in school. And so this one girl was educated. She did continue her schooling all the way through. And she wrote her story in the local newspaper, and a politician came to hear it or heard it and then called the police and they arrested her perpetrator. And even though the laws on the books already had said that, you know, acid violence is criminalized and you'll go to jail, all these things, nobody had gone to jail. Nobody had been charged until this girl with an education wrote her story and moved political will.
That lesson
I learned from my sisters in Bangladesh.
Right.
I was inspired by these girls and these stories. And then I said, well, here I am, a woman with an education, with privilege, empathizing with, you know, people that, like, you wouldn't expect. And they changed my life. They taught me so much. And I came back from that trip and I was like, Julie, you got to be brave. You have got to do more here. Be honest. You know, let the chips fall where they may, regardless of what anyone thinks. And
this was 2016?
Yeah. That was the Oscars, but the trip was in 2010.
Oh, 2011.
So I went to Bangladesh in 2011, came back, launched Test 400K like maybe 2013, 2014.
Okay.
We did all this. Yeah. So all this other stuff was happening and working. And then the Oscars came.
Right.
And so that moment changed everything for me.
Do you remember her name?
I don't remember her name.
Yeah. Wow. That just got me, that just hit me like a load of like when we say our stories save others, like that changed everything for you
and
kicked you in the ass basically.
Yeah.
That said, okay, you are no different from this woman.
Yep.
This girl, young girl, you are the same.
Yep.
And yet you have much more power, you,
yeah,
to go and make it better for others.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
And I just knew, you know, when I had my daughters in the hospital, I promised them that I would do everything in my power to make it better for them.
Yeah.
And that the way that I would have to do that was to change culture. So I literally took the whole thing, took culture on.
You literally are a warrior for culture. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What's the one thing that people who are listening who are struggling with leadership, they might be a boss, they might just try to be a better leader in their family, a better leader in partnership. What can people do to be better leaders?
Well, I think practicing it, you know, mm-hmm. continuing to find ways to practice it. I always, any opportunity I can take to just practice leadership and, you know, volunteer for things, you know, raise your hand and take on an event or some kind of right. project. It kind of gets you ready. And I've always been doing that. You know, I did that from day one when I walked into high school. My school counselor pulled me out of a line of, you know, 700 kids and said, oh, I want you to join this leadership skills training program. I think you'd be good at it. Now, I don't know if she saw that I needed the skills and help or if she saw that I was a natural leader and she wanted to help me. I don't know which of the two.
I think it's the latter.
I don't know, but
that's funny.
You know, it is natural.
Right.
And so you can then build on that skill and you can get stronger right. and braver.
It's natural for you. It might not be natural for others. So just if it's not natural for anyone listening, just the idea of raising your hand and speaking up or volunteering for something, taking on something, or feeling like that pit in your stomach where you're like, oh, I don't want to say this, but I know it's right. Like, I know this would help someone. Like, just try it once.
Yes.
Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? People think you have a bad idea. I remember doing that, saying, like, I think everyone should meditate. I was in a leadership meeting at Harpo.
Yeah.
It was 2003, maybe. It wasn't 2003. It was 2005 or 6.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I've been doing Reiki healing since I was 23.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we should all be meditating. We should learn, you know, how to meditate and meditate together. Now, Oprah was not in that meeting, but I said it and everyone looked at me like, except for two people, like I was insane because we really didn't even have time to pee. And I get it. Like, we didn't have time to meditate, but of course we did. Like, if you make it a priority, you have time to meditate. And a few years later, it
biggest
came
thing
to
in
us.
The world.
Well, no, it came to us. Oprah gave us as a gift our training in transcendental meditation.
Wow.
Now, did I have anything to do with it? No. But did I manifest it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I said it. I spoke it. I spoke the words.
Right.
And
it just
so
takes a little bravery.
Just is a little bravery to speak the words that you want, because then eventually it does happen. If you believe truly that the words are right, speak them.
Absolutely.
So that's a good thing for practice. So when you were 27 years old, I want to know two Julies. I want to know, growing up Julie, what was your talent? And then at 27 years old, how were you a leader then? And like how have you changed now? So let's start with young Julie. Like, what was your talent? What did you like to do as a young girl?
I love to read.
Okay.
I was really athletic. You know, I figure skated for 15 years. I played varsity tennis.
So that's a competitor.
Yeah, was a competitor. I can push myself really hard.
Waking up early.
Yeah,
probably
wake up at 4:30.
Right.
I mean, I didn't sleep.
Right.
So part of that is from PTSD.
Yes.
So when people ask, like, how do you do so much? And I always in the back of my head think, well, if you had PTSD and
you
slept 2 hours a night,
right.
you probably wouldn't sleep either.
Right.
And you'd have time to have two or three careers too.
Right.
Which
so
is
like
what I did.
The comedian in me would say, like, oh, great.
Yeah.
That's the upside of PTSD,
exactly.
Like you just said.
Exactly.
Right.
So I, you know, I always knew where my skills were, and that one of them was just to be able to multitask and balance a lot. So I was figure skating, you know, in the morning. I get picked up at 5. A coach would drop me off for homeroom.
Yeah.
And then I'd have the full day of school. And then during tennis season, I'd be playing tennis till 5:30.
Right.
And then my mom would pick me up and I'd figure skate after tennis. And so I'd get home at about 8 or 9, eat dinner, and then study until like 2 or 3, and then I'd be up at 4. So I'd like slept like 2 hours a night. It was so bad. I don't encourage it. Don't do that.
No, it's terrible.
Thing.
But
bad,
it
bad.
Does
don't
make
do
for a good CEO.
Well, I did learn how to handle a lot of stress. And then
how many hours do you sleep now?
oh, I try to do better. 5, 6.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I feel like that's so much now. I'm like, oh my God, it's so,
so
much sleep.
Interesting. So interesting.
But it's not enough. I know. No. It's like very bad to not sleep. That then I still work on it and try.
That's okay.
And I'll do better.
That's okay. You're working. You're a work in progress.
We all are. Yes. but you know, I was already also then adding on like leadership. Like I was the president of We Help Others. I was the director of Homecoming. I ran for school president.
Right. Did you win?
I lost to my friend Matt Swanson. Matt Swanson, if you're listening, Matt beat me by 11. Votes.
Wow.
Only 11. And I made homemade cookies too.
Oh, you
and
did?
Still
what kind?
Chocolate chip. And still, I did not get all of the votes. But if I was a boy, I probably
would have
won.
You probably would have won. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I say
it's
we
okay.
recount.
I know.
I think, how's Matt doing today? Do you know?
He's great. We are good friends.
Oh, really?
And,
truly?
Yes.
That's
yeah,
so
we are
cute.
Good friends.
That's
yeah.
So
he's
cute.
Awesome. He's a good
That's
guy.
So cute. Well, yeah, so. Listen, I think that however we. Are as young people, we bring all of that into our adult life for better, for worse. And so for this, you've just described someone who can literally multitask and do anything. So at 27 years old, you become the CEO of Lifeway Foods. What did that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, it was really scary and overwhelming because like that first day when my dad died, his best friend stood 5 feet away from me at my mom's house and was like talking to another man, another friend. And he was like, that's it. The company's done. Sell your stock. There's no way a 27-year-old girl can run this company.
Ooh.
It's over.
And your ears
and
perked
of course,
up.
I'm like, yeah, bring it.
Right.
Yeah, to me, I always say thank you to the haters.
Yes.
Thank you to the naysayers because they fuel me.
I mean, one of my questions was going to be what no launched you. I would say that's it.
That's it. That was for sure it.
That is it.
That was a moment that
you have a brother.
Me. I do have a brother.
But he was not.
He was younger.
Put in that role? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was 23. He had just graduated college.
Oh, okay.
So he was, you know, really, really early.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I took that as fuel I use it even today. I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to prove myself, you know, to myself that I could do it. But, you know, I really haven't changed that much. Like who I was when I was 16, 17, 18 is kind of who I've continued to be. I've just gotten a little bit better. But, you know, really, truly, like I have always been empathetic. I've always found the most broken people I want to embrace and, you know, hold and see them and sit with their pain. I have always been able to sit with the hardest stories. Like when people look away, I lean in.
You lean in, right.
And, you know, I have been able to sit with really, really, really painful stories around the world. I mean, I was invited to go to Colombia to help be a voice for the victims of war crimes during the peace process. So, I mean, I literally helped advise the Colombian President Santos when 3 different occasions he asked me to give him advice around how to help the survivors and be a voice for them. So
super casual.
Yeah. Super like no big deal.
As the kids say, NBD. I mean, that's I'm not saying it's insane. It is perfectly, it makes sense. And a leader should be asking you to advise him on leadership and health and wellness and help because you're living proof of it.
And our lens, like I have a lens through which I see the world that not everyone necessarily does. And
definitely not.
You know, if I can use that lens to help now, you know, bring attention to this matter and shine a light on it, then I just feel like it's never going to get solved if we don't talk about it. It's not fun. I don't want to talk about it.
Nobody
I don't
want
to, you know, I don't want to go into a cocktail room and talk about it. And it's now, you know, part of my public story. So I'm, you know, asked about it all the time. And it's okay. I mean, I've learned to handle it and deal with it, but it's important because, you know, again, if I really truly want my daughters to be safer, then I have to be strong enough to sit with
right.
it and right. my own pain right. of it. And but it's so rewarding to me to see how the needle has changed. I can feel it. I can
it's sense
it. It's palpable.
It's moving.
And it's not it's going to be tricky and it's not going to be perfect, right? It's like we're going to learn it.
Anything that we grow in is messy.
Yeah,
and the more messy it is, the more we're like, "Oh, okay, we're growing."
Yeah.
That is a good thing. Nothing yeah. happens without work.
Right.
And that work always includes some messiness. I'm sure you've had that with the growth of your company.
Yeah.
What would your employees say about Julie as a leader? What do you think they'd say?
I think they'd say that she's so passionate. You know, I'm very passionate. And that's every part
Which
of my life.
You.
Thank you. Yeah, I am very passionate about all, like, if I'm into something, I am very, very passionate, and I feed off of other people's energy.
You're loyal.
I really enjoy being around other people. Like, some people hate being around people.
Right,
I get energy
right.
off of it.
Right.
I mean,
Me
I
too.
Do get tired. I need my private space too, but I really enjoy sharing my energy.
Right.
I give it, and then I get it, and
right.
I give more, and I get right. more. I just always feel like today when I walk into a room, people come up to me with tears in their eyes
right.
and they share their stories with me.
Right.
I mean, time after time, there's like a line of people to share their story with me, to tell me their experience.
That's when you know it's working.
It's like unbelievable.
When the line is in front of you, you know it's working.
I can't. And like, I want to talk beautiful. To everyone and give everyone a chance to right. share their story and tell
right.
me. And it's just so moving. And I mean, I get a blowout at the salon and people come up to me and they're like,
I mean, in the Botox chair, I'm telling people my story. Like, I agree. And so many of us sit with our stories and don't talk. And I love to unexpectedly surprise people with asking them a question that they have no idea is coming, or explain something. I mean,
yeah.
you, the idea that people are lining up with tears in their eyes to speak to you is literally your story is that in and of itself is proof that saying your story, speaking your story is what saves and heals lives.
And it's saving mine now I can't.
As soon as you move into the role of helper,
yeah.
mentor, healer, now you've got purpose and there is no fear. It's my favorite thing to say. Fear has no access when you're in your purpose.
Yeah.
So you can't be bullied. You can't be told no. You can't be told close your mouth. You can't say someone tells you not to speak up. You're going to because you are now serving others.
Yeah.
Your talent, your passion, your purpose
Thank
is
you.
Serving others. So there's no fear.
Yeah, and I mean, the worst has already happened. Like,
yeah.
all of the worst has happened.
Yeah.
So the rest is like, you know, it's no nothing can hurt me more than I've already been hurt.
Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, never say never, but
never.
I really do believe that there is just so much light for the future. And I feel really privileged that I've been able to paint a couple pieces of tile to put on this beautiful mosaic. And that things will never be the same. And I feel my ancestors just really proud right now, and all my future selves and my future, you know, grandchildren. You know, I will go through the fire all day over and over again just to give them that better.
What are your grandmother's names?
Paulina and Olga. My great grandmother's Paulina. My grandmother's Olga. And my mother's mother was Helen.
Helen. Okay.
Galina, but in Russian, it
Galina.
Would be like in
okay.
English, I think it would be
right. Have you yeah. used their names in your daughter's names? I don't, or middle
my,
names?
No. So my youngest daughter has my father's name
okay.
in Russian. So it's
right.
Misha, but
oh,
in English,
right,
I
right.
use Misha.
Yeah.
And then Leah has my grandfather's Lev, because my
nice.
Grandmother was still alive when both were born. So I,
right. Got it.
But
got
yeah,
it. Got
yeah.
it. So beautiful.
Thank you.
I love my grandmothers are with me all the time, too.
Yeah.
And they were definitely strong women. So for me, I get it. And I see your ancestors for sure.
Thank you.
Do you have a daily prayer?
Oh, well, you know, I always say that the universe has your back.
Yeah.
And to trust the process. Yeah. And that has, you know, is it a prayer? Not really, but it is a sort of a mantra that even in my very, very hard times, and I've had a few really hard years, I just say the universe has your back and trust the process. That seems to work to get me through those, because a lot of times when things are hard and difficult and you think you can't get out of it and there's no hope, I just think, well, in a couple of years, I'll look back and understand why things were so hard and there was a purpose to it. So just
every time.
Breathe.
Every time. Breathe.
Breathe.
And
breathe.
And the whole story is unraveling and you will see it clearly very soon.
Thank you.
Anyone that's working on it. Last question. What should we as listeners, people, demand from our leaders, whether it's your parent, your president, your boss?
What are the
qualities that we should demand?
Well, I'll say this. I think to be seen is one of the most important things, to recognize that we have to see each other,
right.
Our communities. We have to see our staff. We have to see our family.
Yes.
Like really see them and sit with their stories.
So when somebody comes into your office, if you are an employee, if you are a CEO, a boss of any level, and someone's in your office and you've made time for them because you know they're coming in, or if they're coming in and you didn't know they were coming in and you don't have time, schedule a time.
Correct.
And be off your phone, be off your computer, and listen
really
with your heart and your ears and your eyes.
That's exactly right.
I struggled with that as a boss because we had so much pressure and such little time in the day.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking about it and going, okay, I got to do better. And so we can't always do it perfectly.
Yeah.
My team meant the world to me. They still do. And I would do anything and did anything for them. But it is no matter how much time, you know, you don't have and you think like, oh, this person's taking up my time. That person is integral to your staff, your company, or whatever. And they need time. And if it's too much time, then you schedule it for a different time.
Right. And I'm not saying to fix people's problems.
No.
I think that people are able to fix a lot, you know, that we don't give people enough credit for their own ability to be resilient. And, you know, we don't have to fix things.
Right.
Just to be able to see somebody and sit with their pain is enough.
It's the most beautiful gift you can give someone.
Yeah. And to sit with somebody while they're, you know, going through something hard. And I mean, we are all in this life together, and like we have to be there for each other, and that's what I've also seen in the last few years, that it is community that saves us and gives us a place to land and to unwind and to have a just a place to let go of some of this stuff. I mean, just being able to be seen. And we've also started to learn a lot more about what is good parenting from that perspective. I think that's so important because, you know, as an immigrant child, none of these words or themes were used in my family. I mean, it's a luxury.
It's
to
a luxury.
Talk like this.
Totally.
When you're an immigrant, you're just trying to put food on the table.
Right.
I didn't see my dad for 3 months.
Right.
You know, that's why I gravitated to go work with him, because I got a chance to like learn, you know, who he was.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't have those kinds of conversations didn't happen. And if I started
luxury.
To cry, my parents would say, stop crying. Don't cry. No one died. But, you know, then that's why it took me till I'm 44 to learn how to cry.
Right,
I did
right,
not
right.
know how to cry. And so I couldn't even find my own truth because I needed to really cry a river of tears to find my truth.
Right.
But, I mean, I think yesterday, you know, my daughter was crying over Kobe, even though this is going to air down the line.
Well, we're taping this the day after, 2 days after Kobe Bryant and his beautiful daughter Gigi and all of the victims on the plane.
Right.
So helicopter. You
know, my 9-year-old, yeah. It's kind of the first experience that she's had.
Yes.
Even though she was around for Prince and some of the other mm-hmm. Passings of people. But, you know, she's older and she started to feel, and she's like picking it up from her friends, and mm-hmm. she's really starting, you know, she's and processing it. And I walked into the room after Sundance and I came to say goodnight to her, and she was crying, and I was like, what happened? What's wrong? Did somebody bully you? What happened? She said, I'm so sad. Kobe Bryant died.
Yeah.
And, you know, normally, and here somebody did die. Now, my mother would have been like, but you don't know him. Don't cry.
She would have found a reason for you not to cry.
But, you know, here I was like, oh, yeah, that is really sad. And just like giving her the chance to have that feeling without trying to move it or change it is really powerful.
I have never heard better parenting advice than when a friend who lost his son to suicide said, we need to sit with our kids and let them just speak and tell people how they feel, tell you the parent, and not to say, oh, we can fix it, or oh, if your girlfriend broke up with you, there's more girls, bigger, better fish in the sea. That's not it.
It's not helpful.
Let people be seen, let them be heard, let them feel. Just sit, listen. Don't even speak if you don't have to.
Right.
Just listen.
Yeah. Just and learning to hold space for other people, I think, is what we're really talking about.
And the thing you just said, which is when you said it, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but you did, so thank you. You said community, and that is the key to all of this.
Yeah.
That Vanessa Bryant and the other families who's lost their loved ones on this plane, on this helicopter, need community. I mean, they can't do this alone. No human can survive this alone. And so I encourage everyone listening to keep praying for the Bryant family, for those other families that we don't know the names of, but one day we will, for God to grant them moments of peace. And through this tragedy, let there be light, let there be love, and let there be something that comes from it. Because Kobe was doing what he loved.
Yeah, and I think I wish I had like a chance to talk to him today.
Me too.
Because I'd really like to know, you know, how he. I'd like. There's a lot of questions I have for him. I would have for him.
Yeah.
Today, and what like his role as a male athlete and a role model, like what he'd learned through his journey mm-hmm. and even some of the harder days of his journey.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's complex.
It is complex.
It's you're right that there are so many great things to learn from him and what we learn about mourning in general and mm-hmm. grief and how mm-hmm. we hold each other in those moments of grief. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can think about, you know, 9/11 or Boston Marathon bombings or
there's too many things to list.
Yeah. You could go through, but the thing is,
Sandy.
It's like, we can't bury our head and pretend that none of those things are happening.
No.
And unfortunately at some point in our time, in our life,
something
is going to happen that hurts so bad that feels like you are in such darkness that you'll never get out.
Right.
And so you do need your community to support you, in
community.
Those times.
And
you will get out. Eventually you will.
The
sun will rise.
And even in, I'll just end with this, even if you don't know the person, the power of prayer and good feelings and goodwill is palpable. Mm-hmm. It can't be measured, but it is real. And so I'm praying for Vanessa like she is my girlfriend.
Mm.
I want to hug her, and I visualize her, and I think of her, and I weep, but I also pray. So I think all of us here, the greatest leadership quality can be love, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we love ourselves, we can love others more deeply, and that makes for great leaders. So Julie, your heart is huge.
Thank you.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time in your day. I know you have a very busy day.
Thank you.
You just came back from Sundance, and here you are at Mystery Street Recording Company taking the time to speak to me and anyone who's listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
About leadership and being a survivor and speaking up and speaking our stories, which are all things that are so deeply important to my heart, and I know yours. So thank you for paving the way. I'm with you all
thank
the way.
You.
Thank you. Julie Smolansky, CEO of Lifeway Foods and executive producer of the new film that we should all go see, On the Record, author of the Kefir Cookbook. And go get yourself some Lifeway kefir, because it will make your gut healthy.
Yes, and probiotics
and healthy guts lead to happy life. Hey, want to be my sponsor?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is the Love Speaks series podcast. Your love speaks. Thanks. Bye. I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me on all of my social platforms at Live Love Speaks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Speak. Love your story, your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. Check out my blog while you're there.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks. Each week, Sally Lou and her crew have a conversation about how love speaks in their lives and how it can speak in yours. From kindness to composting, no topic is off limits. If you need a community to kickstart your heart, you need the Love Speaks series.
Thanks for listening. Your love speaks.